Welcome to the Altered Call Podcast. Today we are going to discuss children. How do you set a godly example for your kids and train them up towards adulthood? My name is Alex Plashavsky. I believe that space unicorns fire marshmallow lasers. I believe that religion is what we settle for. And I believe that you were uniquely created to reflect God's glory in the world. Recapping the framework. As Christians, we are meant to bring glory to God generally through our purpose and specifically through our various callings. The enemy wants to prevent this by forcing us to stumble in any of an infinite number of ways. Stewardship is the application of our current knowledge and ability to defend our lives against that enemy. The discipleship path is an optional framework that you can use to build and maintain standards that relate to self, family, vocation, and church. This is meant to create a baseline of stewardship from which we can explore specific calls of God. We will start by establishing minimum standards strong enough to ensure that we are being faithful and on which we can build our desired lives. We will maintain these standards until we are given a specific calling of God, which we will prioritize accordingly. Now we move from the symbiotic to the parasitic, where your relationship with your wife can result in a process that feeds the needs of both parties. Pouring into your children will largely be a one-way street. A child will rarely be presented with an appropriate opportunity to repay a loving and capable parent for all that they have received, and such a parent would almost certainly never ask them to try. Instead, we must start by accepting the fact that raising our children is a gift that we give to others, an offering that we make towards the future of mankind and towards our God. Time and familiarity are the enemies here. It is easy to assume that because your children are always there, they will always be there. I'm at an age where many of my friends are starting to look at their teenagers and wonder where all the time has gone. Instead of looking at them with endless possibilities, they begin to see a clock slowly counting down. Only 2 summers left, only 1 more spring break, 1 last Christmas as a family. Obviously, some of this paranoia is overblown. It's not like they'll never see each other again. But something about having a child in high school seems to force parents into realizing what they could have known all along. That their children are a sacred gift, and that one day, near or far, they will leave. If you have children at home, then you have the opportunity to be the primary voice speaking into their life. It is likely that you and your wife know your children better than anyone else on the planet. You know how they think, how they act, what they fear, what they love. Possibly even better than they know it themselves. As such, it is your job to nurture the good and useful things in them to the point that they will be well-equipped to live a life independent from you in the future. This requires that you spend time with your children. Lots of time. Now is a good time to revisit the idea of capacity. Any activity that your household engages in must benefit one or more members of the household to an extent that justifies its existence. The more kids that you have, the more overlap required. Joining a sport or activity can be good for your kids, but is it better than quality time with you? Kids that are active tend to get into less trouble because of community support and positive role models. But who is more qualified to be a role model than you? What community would you rather support them than your family? I'm not saying that activities are bad, but I think that it's important to realize what you are trading away. If you want each kid to do a sport and then enforce solid family time outside of that, wonderful. But every ounce of influence that you surrender to other adults takes from the responsibility that you have been entrusted with. It seems commonplace for parents to dislike their children or to avoid wanting to spend time with them. I'm always forced to wonder how much of this is sincere and how much is just adult whining. To the extent that it is sincere, I always wonder how much time those parents spend nurturing their children into the types of people that they would enjoy spending time with, instead of just shipping their kids off to other adults and then being disappointed by the result. I'm not saying that you need to spend every second with your kids. Quite the opposite. I just want to encourage you to make the most of the time that you do have. Leveraging your passions and desires such that time spent with your children also addresses your needs. This isn't necessarily forcing them to participate in something that they hate, but finding creative solutions that you both enjoy together. If you enjoy the outdoors, then maybe your Saturday routine looks like a morning hike with one kid and then sitting outside and reading with another. If you enjoy sports, then maybe you watch the game with the child that's interested in that and prepare a pregame meal with another one. In both cases, the day addresses your needs while simultaneously feeding the needs of your children. It teaches healthy rhythms and interactions with passion and rest while engaging in meaningful quality time. By pairing good stewardship with intentionality, you get the opportunity to teach your children how to care for their own mental, physical, and spiritual needs, as well as how you want them to relate to their parents and siblings. Now, you may not feel qualified to teach each of these areas. In fact, you may still be struggling in one or more of those areas yourself, but the responsibility still falls to you. Your children will watch everything that you do, and they will act or react accordingly. Your best option is to be a strong example of what is healthy and true. The next best option is to show them that you're trying and attempt to inspire them to better in spite of your example. Somewhere much further down the list is engaging in deceptive behavior and hypocrisy. Here is what healthy training looks like. We start with rules. Do this, don't do that. It's very clear and simple. This is most useful with young children, but either way, it effectively draws a barrier of protection around the concept being introduced. For example, you might say that the rule is don't cross the street without an adult. Unfortunately, some parents stop here because it can be tempting to simply control your children instead of teaching them the intricacies of how the world works. It can also seem scary to explain or defend a belief that you don't fully understand yourself. Please know that any belief that your child is encouraged to pursue in ignorance is something that they will discard when it no longer serves them. It's fine to start with the rule, "We go to church on Sundays," but if that is the only justification that they ever receive, then they will quickly abandon the church on their own. From there, we want to age-appropriately expose the kids to why the rule exists. The rule remains, but you provide clarity around it. We don't cross the street without an adult because I don't want you to get hit by a car. This exposure empowers the child to begin observing the usefulness and limitations of the rule without giving them permission to engage with the rule directly. They might notice that sometimes we wait until all the cars are gone. Other times we quickly cross as a car approaches. This will all be useful information to them when they incorporate it later. The next step is playing with the rule. Again, the rule stays in place, but you start to probe understanding. Would now be a good or a bad time to cross the street? This gauges comprehension of the why behind the rule and allows for the child to engage with the observed limitations in a non-threatening way. Then you allow the child to break the rule under specific conditions. After ensuring safety, you ask if the child would like to try crossing the street under your supervision. At this point, you have transferred responsibility for both understanding and applying the why behind the rule, while maintaining responsibility for the outcome. Next comes trial and error. Maybe instead of you being physically present to break the rule, they need to ask first. This gives you limited input over their decision-making while acknowledging that they are gradually becoming more responsible and independent. The final stage in the process is independence. This doesn't necessarily coincide with the child leaving home, but they have proven themselves capable of handling this particular aspect of life to the point that your input is no longer required. Now, depending on the topic and capabilities of the child, some of these steps could be skipped over or returned to as the child develops. During each of these phases, it is important to provide useful feedback and guidance to nurture a belief that is both true and useful. If the child performs poorly, let them know. If they do well, let them know that too. Our house operates on praising the good and making good things as easy as possible to do. This stems from my belief that the good should be celebrated and that it's much easier to stay on the right path than it is to go from the wrong path onto the right one. If you've been listening to the beliefs episodes, then you might notice that these stages coincide a great deal with what I call the life cycle of a belief. The process goes from something that you think about to something that you slowly gain understanding and ownership of. In this way, you are allowed to intentionally nurture the beliefs that your children hold, equipping them with beliefs that you find to be true and useful. My kids are young. I have a 4 and a 7-year-old. But even at this point, they have a handful of areas where they are required to act independently. For example, Both of them are responsible for asking nice questions when they want something. This means that it both needs to be in the form of a question and that they are required to say please. If these conditions are not met, then they do not get the thing that they want. In absence of proper behavior, we generally either ignore the request entirely or simply say, try again. There is no explaining of the rule because it is known. Instead, we simply encourage them to figure out the correct approach. This is a belief that they know and have taken ownership of. Now they just need to practice it and strengthen it over time. Another advantage of a well-connected father is the ability to deny poor beliefs from taking hold. If you begin to see something untrue or harmful taking root in your child, you have the opportunity to prune it out immediately and replace it with something good. Now, this might cause short-term discomfort, but the sooner that the issue is addressed, the easier it will be to correct the behavior. I have a friend whose father-in-law made a careless comment to his daughter regarding food and body image. 1 second later, he stepped in, denying the comment in front of both his daughter and father-in-law, replacing it with his perspective, and stating that comments like that wouldn't be tolerated in the future. Now, the father-in-law almost certainly thought that the comment was harmless, but my friend knew his daughter enough to know that this thought couldn't be allowed to take root. It is entirely possible that nothing bad would have come from letting this go and keeping the peace. But he wanted to maintain control over how his daughter viewed her body and was unwilling to give that power to a random comment. You have been given responsibility to shape your children. You have tremendous power to shape their core beliefs and build a foundation that they can take with them into adulthood. Don't allow culture, media, or even people that you love shape them poorly. I really enjoy envisioning God the Father, because I think He views me the same way that I view my children. Instead of getting upset or disappointed in my behavior, what if it's just as simple as, hey, try again? The challenge on the other side of this concept, though, is that men have a special obligation to show their children fatherly love that is our best approximation of how God might behave in our situation. This isn't an easy thing, but how would you feel if your view of God was someone that knew you intimately, made time to address your specific needs, and taught you everything that He knew to be good and true? As always, we will fall short of this goal. But by taking our role seriously and attempting to do right by our children, we have the opportunity to set them up for spiritual success in the future. So we have all this influence and responsibility. How do we not screw up our kids? You don't. Your kids won't be perfect. They will pick up bad habits from you, they will have weaknesses that you couldn't understand or deal with, and they will have opportunities that you missed. Parents experience far too much guilt as it is. Don't burden yourself with perfection. The future belongs to God. Do what you know to do in the present and try not to worry about what comes next. Here's what I'm aiming for with my children. I want to transfer to them my best practices and beliefs while simultaneously encouraging what comes naturally to them. It's not my goal to replicate myself in my children, but to carefully curate the best parts of myself while allowing them to retain as much of themselves as possible. I want them to enter the world equipped to live their life, not the life that I could have lived under my own tutelage. Acknowledging reality. You only have so much time and influence with your kids before you lose the majority of that influence. Maybe it's 18 years, maybe it's a handful of months. Within that set of limitations, what is the best relationship that you can build with your children and the best beliefs that you can equip them with before they leave? What skills and beliefs do you need to explore in more detail such that you set a good example of how to interact with the world? Teach your children the best of everything that you know about interacting with the world. Show them your struggles and failures such that they can hopefully avoid making those same mistakes. And give them the opportunity to ask challenging questions of the beliefs that you hold. When you don't know, admit it, and then show them what it's like to pursue that information. This allows you to display authenticity and builds trust. In the long run, your child may not agree with everything that you believe, but at least they will know that you live by what you preach. As such, I think that fruit looks like open lines of communication, trust, and seeking your guidance proactively. If you want to honor God in this area of your life, it takes a lot of time and effort. You won't always feel like you are making progress, but remain faithful. It may take months or years of faithful service before you see any results at all. Do what you know to do. Give them your time and attention, and pray that God steps in to cover the rest. Your kids are your love letter to the future. Try to write a good one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Altered Call Podcast. Before you go, I want to make you aware of our new YouTube page. There I will post a weekly update where I discuss the most recent episode of the podcast in more detail and tease information that is coming in future episodes. Feel free to like and subscribe here, there, and everywhere if you find value exploring these ideas. You can reach me by email using alex@alteredcall.com, or you can visit the website for additional information.